quantize a circuit and end up with a qubit. And we introduced the idea of a flux quantum. And this is quantized by a wave function over a loop. And notice that there's no geometric terms that come into this. And of course, a factor of two, because we're talking about Cooper pairs, but we could have talked about flux quantization for a conductor, and that would be all fine too. And so this was the first thing. And then we looked at a tunnel junction. So we have two conductors and some insulating piece between it. And we gave a circuit element for it. And what we found, well, actually, I just told you, I didn't try to prove anything, is two relationships of the circuit parameters in the phase over this junction. So this is the phase difference. And of course, this is the phase difference of the wave function over that junction, right? And I sub C is the critical current. And that is a parameter of the conductor. It's not a parameter of the junction, it's a parameter of the conductor. And so we pick up a phase that depends upon how close we get to the critical current. Of course, once we exceed the critical current, everything changes. So we're talking about being below the critical current value. And then the second Josephson relationship says that the phase ramps depending upon the voltage. So that if I have a voltage over the junction, then the phase is going to have a linear ramp over time. And of course, we can rewrite that in terms of our only parameter, which is to say that we have the flux quanta. Now, so we looked at the AC and DC Josephson effects that were experiments to demonstrate that these things are in fact right. But at the moment, we just go back and look at this current element. And in a circuit analysis, we're going to look at this as having three pieces. A capacitance, because the tunnel junction is a capacitor. And it's a pretty large capacitor in general, because the insulating layer needs to be thin in order for there to be a tunneling probability. And so, of course, the thinner the insulation, the higher the capacitance. and a resistance due to some leakage over the device. So this is leakage in this insulator, which is typically an oxide. And so now then we can think about our currents to the system. And you know, basically what I want to do is to say that of course we can use Kirchhoff's current law. And so we have currents flowing through the capacitor to the junction, and the resistance and the current that we're going to bias this with will be the sum of those. So the current through the junction is just given by Josephson's equation. The current through the resistance, through the resistor, is just given by Ohm's law. And the voltage, of course, across the JJ is given here. And so, you know, we can remember that the voltage is equal to H bar over 2E d phi dt. And therefore, I sub R is equal to H bar over 2ER So the current depends upon the change in the phase. And finally, the current through the capacitor depends upon the time variation of the voltage. So we simply take the derivative of Josephson's relationship. Leading us with the current through the capacitor. Good. And at this point, we're essentially done. So let's just put it together. So we'll take a current, and I'll bias the junction like so. And of course, the current is the sum of those two, three. So now then, we have a circuit that looks exactly like we have a driven pendulum. So I have a term which is the moment of inertia, the damping of the pendulum, and the drive of the pendulum. And so then, if I take this current biased Josephson junction, then I could say, well, the coordinate of this. So, of course, if I have a pendulum, the coordinate is the phase that we're swinging. But if I have a JJ for this, the coordinate of our oscillator is the phase. The natural frequency of this depends upon the flux quanta. It depends upon the critical current, right? Because those are giving us the energy of the system. And it depends upon the capacitance, because that's our reactive element in this. And so the frequency has to have a component that looks reactive. Damping is exactly as you'd expect, 1 over RC. The forcing, of course, in a pendulum is you are applying some torque. The forcing here is the bias current. That might seem a little bit odd, right, that you're going to force a system to oscillate by applying a DC current. But of course, Josephson's first relationship gives us that ability to do this. Okay. And in the critical forcing, so you know, you have a pendulum. And you have a critical forcing where, of course, it no longer oscillates, where it just drives for half a loop. And that's at IDC is equal to the critical current, unsurprisingly. Okay? So now then we have our model of this to say that we're going to set up a current-biased device. And in that current bias device, we end up having an oscillator. And provided that we're biasing it below the critical current of the material, then we'll have it oscillating with some frequency. And even though, you know, if we're biased below the critical current, then the voltage over the junction is zero. But the wave function still has a phase difference over that. And so you see that there's still damping in the system because of the phase difference over the junction. Right? You're not damping because there's a voltage difference over the junction. So quantum devices should be a little bit different, right? And it's a nice exercise for the student, which we won't ask you to do. Okay, but now take IDC and ramp it up slowly. And do that from zero. And so I want to take this axis and have Now plot it in terms of the critical current. And I want the time average voltage over the JJ. Okay? I need a time average because once we've exceeded the critical current, then the system's still going to oscillate. And so I don't want to think about this as a DC. So we start here. And of course, the time average voltage remains zero up until I get to one. And then it jumps over and it would continue in this direction. So the frequency would continue to increase. So we're going this way, this way, this way. But if we came back, it would undershoot and then come over here and go down. And this piece is due to the kinetic inductance of the charge carriers. And you know, if you look at Ohm's law, Ohm's law is incredibly useful. But for an AC signal isn't correct because it neglects the momentum of the charge carriers. And of course, if you have electrons as the charge carriers and the electrons are scattering all the time, then it's no problem, right? Because then they don't have, scattering thermalizes the momentum. But in a superconductor, or in a ballistic electron system, where there's no scattering, then the momentum of the charge carriers matters. That holds some energy. And so we undershoot a little bit. Good. All right. So now then we have our expression. In terms of the currents. And we've identified the coordinate that we want to describe things in terms of, which is the phase of the wave function. And you know, we want to keep reminding ourselves that this is the phase over the JJ, right? So it's a phase difference on the two sides of the JJ. And what I'd like to do is to rewrite this so that I have a potential. And that's okay, because we'll take and find a potential as that the force of our system is the time derivative of the potential. All right, so this is just a general result. So rewriting so now then, we have our force, and therefore the potential is equal to to the phase difference, modified by the ratio of the DC to critical current. So this thing is going to be 0 to 1. And then a periodic function of that piece. And so if I plot out the potential as a function of the phase versus phase, then of course, if IDC is 0, it looks like that. If we go to critical coupling, then what that means is that these are flat. There's no longer any minima. And so one way of using this device as a quantum system is to say, oh, I'll take this potential here, I'll organize the parameters for it so that I can fit a set of eigenstates inside that potential. And then when I want to measure it, I'll come down and go into this so-called washboard potential, where the system is going to ramp down and fall, and what I'll find is that the system will oscillate. And it'll oscillate at a different level of the DC current, depending upon whether I'm in the higher energy eigenstate or the lower energy eigenstate. Okay, so we have a potential. We have a device. But it's not the device we want yet. Because all we did was I current biased the JJ. I didn't add any external fields into this, right? I mean, the circuit element looks like there's a loop way up there on that board. But there isn't any loop because I didn't put any inductance in that system. All we have in that system is I have a JJ that I've applied a current across. And so we go instead to a device that looks like this. So here I have my tunnel junction. And so then I rewrite this as having inductors so that we've defined a loop in the parameters associated with that loop. The capacitance remains, of course, the JJ. And the resistance, and I'll just spread the inductor on the two sides. Doesn't matter really how we do that. Okay, so now nicely, we can add back in a vector potential. We can add back in the flux quantization. And I'm not going to go through it all because it gets to be just algebra. And what we end up with So now I end up with an equation of motion for the system that includes this inductive term, and of course, changes the current, because the current is split over these two paths, and not all of it goes through the JJ. And this is the potential that we showed last time, that we have a potential which is the sinusoidal piece and the parabolic part. And if I try to draw it, etc. We end up with the two levels and this double well potential, and this is our qubit. And we can change effectively this bias point by how we add external flux to the system, but we've talked about that in the past. And so here, you know, it's more useful just to say, oh yes, I've got these two energy levels there. If I looked at each well individually, its current in the left or right hand side rotating through this piece, and I lost a leg there. But you see that here we have a current bias. But still, there'll be an oscillating current within here. There's no voltage drop across there, but there is a phase difference between them that leads to this oscillation. Okay, so we have our qubit. And of course, we can continue to make these more complicated. If I look at this piece, and say, what leads to a loss of coherence in these systems? A loss of coherence comes because of leakage through this, the resistive damping. It comes because we have magnetic particles in the system, and that they can couple into the flux that threads the junction, and therefore add a noise that looks like a noise is on the current. So most of these things, what you'll find is that if I take a parameter out of this, it'll look like I've added a noise here. Okay. So then we have our little piece, and we could say, well, how should we use it? So I have my qubit here. And remember that we discussed, we showed that if we had a resonator and that we could look at the dress states picture of the resonator coupled to a two-level system. And fortunately, we can do that because this piece, of course, depends upon a voltage and it depends upon a flux. And so we can couple in either magnetically or electrically. And so I can take our qubit and I can say, well, I'm going to put a resonator here and I'll use it to couple to another qubit. And remember how this coupling worked. That the coupling worked when the two qubits were in resonance, right? But the resonator was detuned. And then we could have an exchange interaction between the qubit and between these two qubits, mediated by the resonator, but the resonator doesn't participate. And so if you went to, as an example, the IBM experience, then they have a nice little 5-qubit piece where you can couple a central qubit couples to all others. And none of the other qubits are coupled, but that's okay if I have individual control, which I get because I can apply a microwave field here. And I have coupling to one central qubit that every qubit is in turn coupled to, then I have universal control. And you end up with circuits like this today because, of course, for each of these elements, I need to bring in lines so that I can bias them, and I need to bring in fields so that I can drive them. And so I need space for the rest of the wiring that goes around here. So I can't do things like say, oh, let me take a series of resonators and put another one here and couple all these things. Because I need to be able to get wires to that. And at this point, the fabrication steps are such that it's easiest if I do this all in one plane. Now, that's changing rapidly, but it's not changed yet. Okay? Good. So there's a lot more we could say about superconducting qubits, but we're not going to.